So today, the topic is mechanism of action. How do we act or why do we act? So coming back to this chart, I think I am the body, mind and intellect. With the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts. And V stands for vasanas or desires. Or tendencies. Vasanas are my tendencies, and each and every one of us is born with certain tendencies. For example, in the same family there may be three children, and one may be interested in art, another one is interested in science, and a third one is good at sports. Even though they are from the same parents, but the tendencies they are born with, what we believe is as a result of previous birth, because from previous birth we have accumulated certain vasanas or tendencies. And then what these tendencies do is they create desire. In the intellect, I get a desire. Say I have a tendency to drink. I am an alcoholic. So the moment that, I love to drink. So what happens? A desire arises in the intellect. I need to go get a drink. And then the thought comes in the mind. Yes, yes, that's a great idea. Let's go get a drink. And then the body, and it says, okay, he drives to the liquor store and buys a bottle and goes home and drinks. Similarly, another person may have a tendency to do community service, to serve the world. And same thing, that tendency becomes a desire in the intellect. Okay, I must do this. And the desire gets solidified in the form of a thought that it's a good idea to serve the world, and then such a person goes out and serves the homeless or works in a food kitchen or go builds a house, Habitat for Humanity. So desire, thought, action, and then when I act, then it increases the desire. So if I have a desire for alcohol, as I drink, it increases my desire. Then I again drink more, and then I increase my desire. So I'm caught in the vicious cycle, and that strengthens my tendency. On the other hand, a person doing good work, serving the world, helping people, then that action leads to more desire. I must serve, I must help. But then what that does reduces the vasanas. See, vasanas are my selfish tendencies. And as I do more work, serving the world, helping others, slowly my vasanas get reduced, my tendencies get reduced, and my desires get less, because desires come from selfishness. As my desires get less, I become more aware of the Lord's presence within. God is in every one of us. Here we put it as Om. You can call it Jesus, Father in heaven. So the question is, are we compelled by our desires or do we have self-will? In the book, they give the example of a tiger. Now, tiger has no choice. Tiger, when it sees a deer, it will pounce on the deer and eat it. He's not going to say, from tomorrow I'm going to become a peaceful tiger and love all the deer and eat fruits and vegetables and leaves from the tree. No, he has no choice because that is his tendency. But human beings have a choice of whether to do right or wrong, whether to do good or bad. And depending on that, if I do more wrong things, I strengthen my ignorance. If I do more right things, I strengthen my good tendencies. And vasanas are also called fragrance. So each and every one of us has a unique fragrance. What it means is my tendencies are different from your tendencies. My desires are different from your desires. My thoughts are different from your thoughts. My actions are different. So each one of us is unique. But what is common in all of us is God's presence. There is one God who is there in every one of us. And that is the common factor in everybody. So God is in everybody. He's there in the plants, in the birds, in the animals, in the fish, in the humans. And there is only one God. You can call it by different names. You can call it Allah or Father in heaven or Jesus or Buddha or Krishna. but there is only one God. But a person who repeats wrong actions gets bound by his actions, by his karmas. Bound means he's compelled to do it again and again, and doing the wrong actions strengthens the desire, then it makes him more and more bound. So they describe the world as an upside down tree. How did this world come into existence? So if you have noticed a tree, you know a tree, what happens? The root is in the bottom, and then there is the trunk, and then the branches and the leaves. So the roots are in the bottom and the tree is up. But our life is said to be an upside down tree where the root is above. God, who is the source of all creation, is above us. Of course, God is everywhere, but when we look for God, we say, oh God, please help me. Oh God, please bless. So God is said to be above, and the world is said to be an upside down tree. What do we mean by that? The root is above and the world is below, objects, emotions and thoughts. And I am also an upside down tree because my body, mind and intellect are below and God is above us in this particular chart. So what it means is that God is the source and our body, mind and intellect is an expression of that consciousness. So all of us are an expression of that divinity, because the source, the root, is common. There is one source, there is one root, which is common. But then why do people do wrong things? Why do I hurt somebody? Or why do I cheat somebody? Or why do I lie? Or why do I... So they say because of attachment. Because I feel that this thing will make me happy. And so depending on an object for happiness, I get attached to that object, I get dependent on that object, and then looking for happiness, I again and again commit the same actions and I get bound, I get caught in the desire, repeated desire. And so by repeated actions, karmas, I get bound, and that is called attachment. So how do we function in the world? So they say that in the world, you should function detached. What do we mean by detached? Detached does not mean I don't love my children, or I don't love my husband or my wife or my parents. What we mean by detachment is that I do not depend on a particular object or a particular person or a particular situation for my happiness. Because happiness is within, because God is in every one of us. So in meditation, we connect with God's presence within. And when we do that, then we experience the inner joy, the inner peace, the inner silence. So if we want to find joy, you have to stop depending on the world of objects, because objects will change. What was today, you know, you have a new car, tomorrow it becomes old. Today this person loves me, tomorrow she won't love me. Today I have success, tomorrow I have failure. So objects keep changing, and my body, mind and intellect also keeps changing. What I was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I'm not the same. Physically I have changed, emotionally. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes unhappy. And then my ideas have changed. I used to be a liberal and then I became a conservative. I used to be thinking this is right. Now I think that is right. So my ideas change, my emotions change, my body definitely changes. So with time, everything changes. So if I depend on something that changes, and when that changes, then I'll become unhappy. Oh, she used to love me so much. Oh, my husband used to love me so much and now he doesn't love me anymore. Or my children, you know, they don't call me anymore. They used to call all the time. So dependence on a particular situation leads to unhappiness, because the situations change, people around us change. So what they say is that find happiness within, and once you find God's presence within, then you will see God everywhere. So if you want to see God everywhere, God is not only in the temple or the church or the mosque or the synagogue, but God is in within us, and God is in everything. God is in this chair, God is in the fan, the electricity, the clock, the space, air, everything, trees, everything is that. So find God within, and then you will see God everywhere. And that's why these saints and prophets could spontaneously love everybody, because they saw one God in everybody. While you and I, we always distinguish, okay, this person I like, this person I don't like, this situation I like, this situation I don't like. So the way to like all situation is to see God's hand in everything that is going on. So how do you detach? By becoming a witness. So you witness what is happening and do not let circumstances affect you. Just as we said before, what is a witness? Witness is one who is sitting in the court and testifying that I saw this event, but he is neither related to the prosecution nor to the defense. He is independent. And so his testimony is valid. So similarly, when we become a witness, what we do is we witness the body as something separate from me. Body is my equipment. It's like my car. Just as I use my car to go from one place to another, body is like my car. My mind and intellect are my equipments by which I function in the world. And for that, we have to know how to choose correctly, make the right choice. What is right for me? What is wrong? One has to be very clear in one's thinking of what is right, what is wrong, what I should do, what I should not do. And in life, there are so many choices. You know, they say this is good for me and this is giving me pleasure. So should I pick what is giving me pleasure or should I pick what is good for me? So there is a constant struggle. Oh, this thing makes me happy, but it's not good. It's not right. But the other thing, even though I have to struggle, in the long run, it is good for me. So by making the right choice reminds me of a story. So this lady had eight sons, eight boys. And so her friend came and she said, oh, you have eight boys. What is the oldest one's name? Kevin. Second one, Kevin. Third one, Kevin. Fourth one, Kevin. Sixth, seventh, eighth. All are named Kevin. So she said, why did you name all your eight sons Kevin? She says, it's very simple. When I say, Kevin, dinner is ready, they all eight come. So I don't have to call each one separately. Yeah, that makes sense. You call them all Kevin and they all come. She says, but how about if you want to refer to a particular Kevin? She said, oh, in that case, I use the last name. Each one had a different last name. So similarly, in life, we are faced with a lot of choices. And what is the right choice? Who tells us? The scriptures. Whether it's the Bible, or whether it's the Bhagavad Gita, or whether it's the Quran, or whatever the scriptures are, they tell us what is the right choice and what we should do. And one of the ways to reduce my selfish tendencies is to reduce the ego. The ego, the I, the doer, because I feel I'm so great, I do so much, I go to the temple, I go to the church, I help people, I'm such a wonderful person, I. So instead of saying I, say that the Lord is working through me and He is the one that is working and doing everything. I am just the instrument. When you say I am the instrument, but I am not the doer, then it reduces your ego, your arrogance, your pride, and your thinking that I am so great, I am so wonderful. So the more you reduce the ego, the doership, the more it reduces your desires. When I am not doing it, God is doing it, and I'm doing it for Him or for her, if you worship the Mother Goddess, then when that is happening, then I am not doing it for myself, that automatically reduces my desires, reduces my selfishness. And that is how all the great people in the world, that's how they work. All the great saints, all the great prophets, whether you look at the life of Saint Francis or Shankaracharya or Mirabai or any great saint, they work because they see the oneness, and they do not work for themselves, they work for the higher. And once you reduce desires, then you develop equanimity. What is equanimity? Equanimity is the ability to stay balanced in all situations. Because in life, there is nobody in this world who does not have problems. If you ask anybody, is your life totally free of problems? No, nobody. Whether it's the President of the United States, whether it's the Queen of England, whether it's the Pope, everybody has problems. And all of us, of course, we do. We might have physical problems. Sometime I'm healthy, sometime I'm not healthy. Sometime I'm so sick I can't even do anything. And another time I'm feeling fine, I'm on top of the world. Then at the mind level, sometimes I'm happy and then sometimes I become unhappy. Somebody says I love you and I become happy, and then somebody says I hate you, I don't love you, then I become unhappy. Why? Because I put the key of my happiness in that other person's pocket. And then intellectually, sometimes I'm successful. Some things work out well, some things don't. So in life, there are always pairs of opposites. Heat and cold, joy and sorrow, success and failure, health and ill health. So in these pairs of opposites, a person who can remain balanced, and that is the goal, and that's what meditation teaches us. Because in meditation, when you connect with the Lord's presence within, then such a person who is constantly in touch with God within, then no matter what is happening in the world, he or she is not affected, because I am connected with God. It's like an anchor, like a boat which is anchored firmly to the bottom of the river or bottom of the ocean. The anchor is all the way down. No matter how many winds come, no matter how many waves come, the boat remains firmly anchored. So similarly, when I anchor my faith in God, then I reach that state of equanimity, balance, the ability to remain unaffected in all the pairs of opposites. That's what they say. The world is full of dvandva. Dvandva means two, opposite, good and bad, health and ill health, joy and sorrow. And a person who constantly is connected with God's presence within is said to reach the highest, to become one with God. And that's what Jesus had said, he who had seen me had seen the Father. If you have seen me, you have seen the Father in heaven. Father in heaven and I are one. Shankaracharya, Swami Chinmayananda, Gurudev, all of them taught us that there is one divinity which is everywhere. So the divinity and I are not separate. We always think I am here and God is sitting somewhere up above the clouds and he's looking down at us and he's waiting to punish us or waiting to... No, God is within every one of us. That is the reason I am able to talk, because God is there. That's why you are able to listen and understand. So constant remembrance of God. Constant remembrance. Whenever you see the moon, you think of God's presence. See a sunrise, beautiful sunrise or sunset, that is God. You smell a beautiful flower, fragrance. See a cute little child running around. And anything like that, you see, you're sitting by the riverbank. If you go to Hart Park, which I do sometimes, and go sit by the river and you watch the flow of the river and the trees, and the gentle breeze blowing through that. Anywhere in nature, when we are in nature, we connect with God. So the more you connect with God, the more you reach that divine presence, that God. Because it's like a basketball player. The more he thinks about Michael Jordan or Kobe, he becomes like him. A girl, if she idolizes a singer or a rock star, I want to be like her, then she practices. Somebody wants to be a famous dancer, then you do more dance or music or science, as a physics student wants to be like Einstein. So the more you think about something, that's what you become. So constantly thinking about God, remembering God, and knowing that God is within us, you reach that state. Just as a physics student constantly thinking about Einstein becomes as a great physicist. An actor, you know, thinking about acting becomes a great actor, or a musician, or a football player, or a basketball player. Constant remembrance and effort. So that's how we reach God, by constantly thinking about God, remembering God, and asking God to be with us constantly. God is with us constantly, but we don't remember. And they say spirituality is a one-way street. Once I go on this path, then there is no turning back. And once I decide that that is my path and I'm going to try and reach God, then we use all methods, whatever method I can, to reach the highest. So with the body, I serve God. With the mind, I love God. With my intellect, I learn about God, read good books. And then with meditation, I become one with God. And once you are committed to this path, and once you are going on this path, then there is no return. That's what Swami Chinmayananda always said, our teacher, that spirituality is a one-way street. There is entry only. Once you get on this path, and once you are serious, see, sincerity and seriousness is very important. To be successful in life, if I want to be a successful doctor, I have to be serious about my profession. I want to be a good teacher, I have to be serious. You cannot take, I want to be a good cook, I have to be serious about cooking. I have to learn, I have to pay attention. I want to be good in sports, or I want to be a successful businessman. I have to be serious. I have to take my business seriously. You cannot say, oh, Sunday 1 hour, I'll go do my business. It's not going to happen. 7 days a week, he's there at his store. He's making sure the supplies are there, making sure the customers are happy, making sure he's charging them fairly, getting a good price. So similarly, spirituality has to become a serious affair, where what I want is oneness with God, and that's the only way to get rid of sorrow. Otherwise, life will keep giving us problems, keep giving us sorrows, keep giving us difficulties. And a person who is connected with God, becomes one with God, knows God, then no matter what problems come. So that is the essence of today's talk. That we work because of vasanas, tendencies which create desires, thought and action, and then more action creates more desires and strengthens. So self-will is what we should use as human beings. I should not become a victim of circumstances. Oh, my circumstances are bad, so I give up. No, I become in charge of my life. I take charge. It's like the car is driving you, or you are driving the car. I am driving the car, but suppose tomorrow something gets wrong with the engine and the car is taking off full speed and you're jamming the brake, and it actually happened to me one time. I had a car that I wanted to put it in reverse and it took off at 100 miles an hour and it actually hit a fireworks stand behind me. I tried to jam the brakes and won't stop. Luckily, there was a fireworks stand which was empty. It was 4th of July, but there was still no fireworks in it. It was, I think, 30th of June or something. So they hadn't filled the stand, and it actually demolished that fireworks stand, and my car got. And then I called the company, and they said, oh, there's nothing wrong with the car, and they were making all. So I ended up finally, the car was totaled. So what happened, the car took over and I was unable to control it because there was something wrong with the engine, and the car took off at 100 miles an hour. I was jamming the brake, so similarly in life, we have to control our life, let not our life be in charge of us. And that is the essence of this teaching today. And let us constantly remember God and make the right choices. So that is the talk today. If we have any comments, any questions.
It's a very subjective journey though, so there's not really, you know, what's, you know, you're talking about good and bad. I don't like those words because they're kind of dual, you know, because there's things that are just, there's things that are more aligned with life and living more consciously, and then there's some things, of course, on lower level behaviors. But,
right.
But it, you know, it's subjective though, depending on the journey. Like one person might get a benefit for something, but someone else, like if they're allergic, you know, like if, it might be good for me to have almonds, or if you're allergic, it's bad for you. That's the kind of, you know, one thing it is. It's very subjective.
Right.
Especially the spiritual one. Yet, in the subjectiveness, it seems a lot of people on the path have very similar experiences. But what you do every day, it's kind of, it's like I said, it's, I mean, of course, there's some things that are really, you know, obviously not aligned, but what's might be good for someone is not maybe good for the next person. That's just one thing I've kind of learned. Because sometimes we think, well, oh, I'm doing this and this as part of, you know, not this actual spiritual stuff, but, you know, getting healthy and blah, 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 but that may not be good for somebody else. Same, you know, same thing in actions, or even, you know, we talk about even doing good can become an entrapment if you think you're good.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point. There was one teacher who said, as many souls, that many paths to God. So each and every one of us has a unique path to God. And we are all going to reach there sooner or later. If we don't reach in this lifetime, which we believe, then you will have opportunities in the next life. But the idea is that if I have the human birth and I have the intelligence, then I should make an attempt to reach God in this life itself. And that's true. There is as many people, that many paths. Somebody may like the path of service. Serve God through serving the poor. Somebody likes the path of love. Love God. Somebody wants to know God through reading the scriptures. But then somebody may be a mixture, may do all, may do some service, some love, some knowledge. And one person may be more emotional, may more loving. Another person may be more intellectual. Another one may be more action-oriented, service-oriented. So, depending on my abilities and my tendencies, my path may vary, but the ultimate goal is one. And the example they give is that if you want to go to the top of the mountain, now one person may walk, and it might take him 2 days. Or he may hike. Another person may take a bike, and he may reach in a day. A third person drives the car and he reaches the top of the mountain in 2 hours. Another person takes a helicopter and reaches in 5 minutes. Yeah, so all four are reaching the top of the mountain based on their abilities, based on the equipment they have. But once they reach the top of the mountain, the view is the same. Whether you walked up, whether you took a bike, whether you took a car or you took a helicopter, the beauty that you see of the beautiful valley below and all the wind and the breeze and the clouds and all that, everything is the same. Experience is the same. So once you reach that state of divinity, godhood, whether you are a Christian or a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jew or whatever, or you may be even an atheist, but once you reach that state of divinity, then that experience is the same. But yes, and good and bad are again based on my own understanding. I agree with you. Some person may think this is good, another person may think that is good. But what is said in the scriptures is universally good. That's generally a way to decide what is right and what is wrong, what is good or what is bad, is what is in the scriptures. The Ten Commandments, even 2,000 years later, are still valid. Or the Bhagavad Gita, what is the values given in the Bhagavad Gita. So, let the scriptures be your guide, that's what they say. But you're absolutely right. You know, some people may think it's okay to eat meat, another one might think it is not. See, those are all preferences, choices based on my beliefs. And it does not mean that one is right and another one is wrong. One person may say, oh, this person... No, that's a choice, but there are certain absolute values, like stealing from other, taking what you don't deserve, speaking hateful, lying and all those. So there are certain things that are very clear and certain things are on the borderline. So the idea should be live and let live. Let me do the right thing, but let me not judge others. I think, but thank you, that's a very good point. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Anything else? The new people, any ideas?
No, I could get into the tiger thing, but I'm not going to.
I'm sorry?
I could get into the tiger thing, but I'm not going to.
No, go ahead.
I don't know if you want me to.
No, go ahead. I'm fine with it.
Tigers have a choice. They aren't mindless killing machines.
No, that's good. No, if that's what you think.
If they're not hungry, they won't.
If they're not hungry, they won't eat. But if they are hungry, they won't eat leaves.
Right.
They will look for a deer.
Right.
That's what I was
saying.
Or
a mouse.
Or whatever. Some animal. Yeah. No, your point is right. I'm not saying they're mindless killing machines, but he cannot say that from tomorrow I'm going to become a vegetarian tiger and not kill any deer. That was my point. Not that I'm putting down tigers, huh?
Right.
I'm sorry?
They could, but they could decide just to eat fruits and vegetables, but they wouldn't live long.
Yeah.
But they probably won't because it's not in their nature.
It's not in their nature.
They're tied to their body.
There have been cases of cheetahs or one of the African wildcats, I can't remember exactly which one, adopting an antelope, a baby antelope, and them both starving to death because
right.
Because
the maternal instinct was
higher than
right.
Than, yeah.
So
that's good. Yeah, so that's wonderful.
Because neither one, the lion wouldn't let the antelope go, and also didn't want to eat it because it just lost its babies.
Baby. Yeah, I think that's a wonderful example. Yeah, occasionally, yes, you will find instances like that, but those are the exception rather than the rule.
Right.
Every rule has an exception, and I'm sure you could find it. I was not familiar of that, but if you have some video or a quote, or a link, I'll be happy to see that.
Well, I watched too much Animal Planet.
That's good.
That's one of the better things to watch. Right?
And National Geographic and Discovery Channel.
Now, those are good things to watch. I mean, yeah, because you learn. It's always good. That's wonderful.
And it was
she never watched cartoons as a kid.
Yeah, good.
Well, there was a few.
But yeah, but you were not like
right.
Some kids.
That's good. That's very
everybody
good.
Everybody be talking about cartoons, I'd be talking about antelopes.
That's very
did
wonderful.
You know this?
Right. Good.
Yeah, I was a weird kid.
No, that's not weird. That's good. Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
Say there's some felines, tigers, lions. Captivity that they don't reproduce. Now, is that because they haven't, are they conscious of that? That, if they reproduce, they're going to, create overpopulation?
No, I think they do reproduce. They have had tiger cubs and lion cubs, when they mate them.
But it depends on if you're talking about a zoo or something, they give them contraceptives.
Yeah, but if they bring a male and a female tiger or lion together, they would reproduce. And there have been instances of
brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But there have been instances of cubs, tiger cubs and lion cubs born in zoos who have been, mated. So it's harder for them because the situation, they're confined in the cage and all that. But I don't think it's unheard of that they will mate in captivity. In fact, they celebrate. Oh, today we had a panda cub born.
Well, Well, they usually,
tiger cub.
They usually intentionally impregnate them, like they get,
oh,
like, that's what they do.
Maybe
well,
they intentionally.
Do.
Oh.
They do sometimes.
Pandas don't know how to.
Oh, I see, I see.
Pandas don't like reproducing.
In captivity. Yeah.
Oh, so they intentionally, okay. Oh.
Yeah, they do sometimes. Cause, and then they try to put them back on the wild where they've depopulated a lot, some of the endangered species. But,
right, right.
But yeah, it's not an ideal situation for them. So now they're probably some of the larger animals don't reproduce very well in captivity.
Could be. And then plus they are being slaughtered, you know, they are being shot and killed.
Yeah, we just got back from the wilds.
And we are destroying forests, so that's where they survive. Yeah. Okay, and that's true.
We just came back from
the wilds.
It's called the wilds. It's like the San Diego Wild Animal Park.
But
and now I'm challenging one that we really need to go down and take a look at that one, because this place, in my mind, is huge. It's an old strip mine, coal strip mine quarry or whatever, and they have brought in dirt and plants, and they have to subsidize the minerals for the plants and subsidize.
This year they had
stuff,
four,
but they have been having just, and this is to have, I mean, these animals have acreage. They're not in a cage.
Right.
They have acreages to just be animals. And they're doing this mainly because if they don't, these animals are going to become extinct.
Right. So
so they are into promoting and
right.
trying to increase the numbers and then eventually to
release them.
That's very good, yeah. I think because if I think that this planet is only for me, for humans, then we are going to wipe out other species.
Right.
And so such efforts are very good because ultimately we are all one.
Connected.
That oneness we have to see, that the planet, that the plants have as much right to live as animals, as birds, as fish and humans. But we forget that because we think that's ego, that's I.
Yes.
So when you see God in everybody, then you will spontaneously love all. But thank you very much.